Welcome to Biohackers Lab, a place where we talk to smart people who are figuring out how to improve health in interesting ways. Join us to discover how you can biohack your life, your body, starting today.
Hi, everyone. This is another show, Biohackers Lab. And on today's show, we're going to be talking about EMF and EMF hygiene. If you don't know what that means, don't worry. We're going to be going through that in today's show with our guest. And I'm lucky enough to have a EMF warrior. His name is Scott Compton, a.k.a. Mr. Spock. And Scott has an interesting background where he's gone from biological fields where he was involved with chemistry and lab work and progressed from there into the tech world. So he's gone from understanding healthcare and the basis of physiology and chemistry into the highly advanced world of technology and radio waves and everything that gets involved on that side of things. So it's going to be really fun talking to Scott today about EMFs, because this is something that me and my family also actually do take a very deep interest in, where at the end of the day, you've got these radio waves that could cause you issues. And yeah, we want to just find out really how they can and what we can do about it. So thanks for coming onto the show, Scott.
Yeah, thanks, Gary. Great cool. to be here.
Great. So I think just so everyone's aware, you're a part of a group called the EMF Warriors, which has just launched.
Yeah, it launched actually April 1st. We purposely launched it on April Fool's Day. Just to have a fun little blog that's up there at the website too. You can read all about it there.
Okay. Yeah. So yeah, this is, for anyone who's listening, this is April 1st, 2017. And so what's interesting also with the EMF Warriors is that it's not a corporation, it's not a charity, it's not an NGO. It's just a group of people who are like-minded, who've got together to try put all this information, which we're going to be talking a little bit about today because it's a very big subject, but try to put that all together just to make it digestible and easy for people from a beginner level to an advanced level to understand about this concept of EMF hygiene. So it's both yourself. There's also two other founding members, which is Jamie Ann Monitor and then Jason Bowden-Smith. And yeah, there's a lot more information if you want to find out about you guys on emfwarriors.com. But I guess if we can start off for people who might not even know about EMF, and what is EMF, and why should we even be thinking about this from a health perspective?
Yeah, it actually goes pretty deep here. EMFs are just basically electromagnetic fields. Some people reference them, if you're talking about radio frequencies, it could be electromagnetic frequencies. But typically, yeah, people say electromagnetic fields and, you know, like from nature, just from the sun, from the earth, the sun emits and the earth emits electromagnetic fields as well. But these are called like native fields. They're beneficial to us as humans, and they have wavelengths that are kind of more like, I like to use the analogy, like a DC, like a direct current into our bodies, where all the man-made artificial generated EMFs are more pulsed in their frequencies and what they give off. And they're more unnatural to our signaling in our biological system. So they're unexpected, and they just simply if you think about a phone as a regular mobile phone, like it's giving off 800 megahertz to, often sometimes into the gigahertz, as 5G is approaching here, they're using different higher wavelengths to kind of like have broader bands where they can, just have more availability of space. But these bands that are being used, if you think about it, are not like, even though in nature, like the sun gives off these bands, when like a cell phone gives like, the man-made artificial EMFs, when they come off of these devices like Wi-Fi or cell phone and everything else, they're like pulsed. They're different. They have like different modulation built into them, and they're not like a DC current. They're more like an alternating current. And it's because of that pulse modulation that we're seeing a lot of effects, biological effects, actually more biophysics effects on many different levels. I can get into it later, but kind of the takeaway is like when you use these non-native, these artificial EMFs, it can directly damage your DNA. And I'm talking DNA, not only your nuclear genome, your mitochondrial genome of your DNA. And then like it's been shown to degradate and destroy or have, you know, compromising effects to your myelin. Your myelin are these like protective sheaths that are around your neurons. So for instance, when a baby's born and that the cranial cap is open where there's no, you know, cranium to protect the baby's head, a lot of these frequencies and fields can get into the brain. And as the myelin's trying to develop and start, you know, coming around these neurons to protect them, the radio frequencies look like it can actually halt that process or even reverse that process. And the myelin in babies is not just the issue. It's the myelin in kids and even young adults, because it takes sometimes decades for the myelin to actually build up and surround the neurons. It's always happening. So that's kind of the another angle of it. There's a third angle, which a lot of people talk about, are the voltage gated calcium channels. So it makes your cells more permeable to having calcium flows get into your cells when it's not expected. This also relates to the blood brain barrier and making the blood brain barrier more permeable. So other toxic substances can get into the brain when it's not expected. If you're under these fields or in these fields can do this effect. There's another side of it as well. See, like I'm saying, I'll let you talk here, but the last side of it I'll just talk about is melatonin. So when you sleep at night, right, as night comes down, your melatonin goes up, your cortisol goes down. So then you start creating this melatonin to benefit every cell in your body for regenerative processes. But like if you, for instance, sleep in electric fields or magnetic fields or with your Wi-Fi on, this disrupts melatonin from your pineal gland. And that melatonin level that you would have gotten into a deeper sleep, you're not maybe producing as much melatonin. And then you're not actually regenerating like you should when you're sleeping. This goes into a lot of different processes, probably goes too deep. But yeah, so looking at all the biophysics intersections, like, if a person doesn't even think about their EMFs in their environments, then they could actually just be in hot spots all the time, kind of damaging themselves, damaging their mitochondria, having all these processes take place over longer periods of time, and then you get disease expression from the mitochondrial genome, which I can get into later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it is this process where we have these natural frequencies, both electrical and magnetic, in this world, which is, I guess, for people who don't even have a clue, think of it how birds can migrate and they understand, because they get these frequencies that they know when the seasons are changing and why they need to go from the south to the north or what, wherever they need to travel. Even compasses, just if you need to see that, yeah, there's frequencies in this world. But now, since man invented electricity and has started progressing with technology, and we're playing with these wavelengths, that as we're getting more intense and we're getting more saturated, that this is where we're getting worried. And as you mentioned, we go from deep in the cells, which are these little powerhouses called mitochondria, which actually make the energy for our body, and it all over the place, to even the blood-brain barrier, which is the filter which prevents stuff from getting to your brain that shouldn't get to your brain. So with, I guess, being now 2017, so with EMF then, with man playing with wavelengths, is it just that the intent sort of, I know you said it's with the biophysics here, but it's because we're getting more intense with the pulsing of all these radio waves, and we're actually we're sitting in a lot more because people have more devices, or there's more towers, or there's more antennas or generators that are producing these things versus, say, 10, 20, 30 years ago, even when we had just TVs and radio stations.
Yeah, it's like what you said, it is a combinational effect. Like, it's the frequency, like it's the amount of density that's around you, the intensity of these fields, as well as how easy it is to be in the fields now compared to like the 1980s. A great example is like, I'll just rattle off a lot of things here that a person can be in, right? Okay. Mm-hmm. So from your main power grid, you have 60 Hertz, or I think in Great Britain there, you have 50 Hertz systems, and that pulsed Hertz rate, is unexpected, right, to the biology. But it generates a lot of electricity, and that energy and the electrical EMFs that just come off the power grid all the time can also create dirty electricity in your home. It can give you straight voltage just into your body. So instead of being at like more like 0 volts as you're walking around like you would in nature, in your home, you might be sitting in a hot spot where you might have 3 or 4 or even 10 volts in your system. Like if a person's on a laptop that's ungrounded, plugged into the wall with a 2-prong connector, because it's ungrounded, right? They might be, the moment they touch the keyboard, they could go from like 2 volts from their residual environment, maybe up to like 8 or 10 volts, because they're directly connecting into the power grid, touching that laptop.
I've actually got a great story about that.
Because
on my computer here, I've got 2 different PowerPoints, and the one isn't the, I had a problem with the one connector into the transformer. So it was a grounded unit, but what was fascinated me was I'd be on the laptop, and then my daughter touched me, and she touched my wife, and we felt the voltage go through us. Like, it shocked my wife. She felt electricity from my going through my daughter's fingers. And I was touching it, not realizing voltage is passing through me, through the computer, back to me as a loop. I didn't feel it, but when other people came in and touched, we created a circuit.
So
it's that invisible thing that we're playing with all the time, which is what you're talking about.
Actually, like with the fields, like I'm just talking about the voltage, but you're right, like off of like a wire or an appliance that's running. So once you turn on something, you create a magnetic field associated with the electric field that's like, you know, 90 degree angle opposed to it. And that magnetic field generated typically can actually extend out like 5-6 feet away from the source, like in a radius around that generation. So like if you have a fan that's just, you know, you turn on a fan because it's a warm day to like cool you off, that fan could actually, like if you're within 5 feet of it, you're getting this magnetic field, and you might actually be pulling in like 4 or 5 milligauss of that field. That 4 or 5 milligauss, it seems like a low number, but really some detrimental effects, the biological effects, have been shown at even 3 milligauss. So I like to see numbers in the home. If you're sitting in a space, the magnetic field being under a 2 milligauss or even less, and same with the electric field. The electric field can also generate milligauss as well, and I want to see those really low. But man, I've seen some really bad situations in the past, like even in beds. Okay, so like I saw a bed a couple months ago where a couple was sleeping in this bed. They were both using CPAPs, and they both had health problems. And when I measured their bed, I found a 15 milligauss field in the center of their bed. And I realized that their bed, I looked under it, and it was plugged into the wall. It was one of the beds that could lift up and down. But just because that bed was plugged into the wall, it was giving a field in the center of the bed to them. And this is even completely outside of the voltage that was coming into their bed. That's just the field that they were sitting in. So that bed was toxic to them.
Okay. And do you think that happens with all sort of mechanical beds that can either raise up or down, or adjustable beds?
Probably if it's plugged into the wall, especially if it's a 2-pronged plug, if it's a non-grounded plug, I sleep with my circuit breakers off at night. I don't have any of the power grid in the walls, because remember, like if you have a bed up against a wall, that wall can still be generating itself some electrical EMF off of that. And that actually can, even off of your power lines, there's a little bit of radio frequency that can come off of it.
So it's not just the open plug. It's even the wiring, which we, again, we don't see because it's behind the wall and you don't know where the wire is mapped.
You don't know where the wire is mapped unless you take a meter and actually measure along and find out where it is. You know, like if you go down to an outlet on the wall, those outlets also usually have a magnetic field that's coming out, you know, a foot or two from those. It really depends on every house is the wiring's different, the environment's different, how the lay of the wires are. It's just a whole, like, there's a lot of things that have to be checked out, and that's really where the building biologist comes in. There's not very many of them out there unless you're like in a major city. That's kind of what I'm doing like EMF hygiene, is kind of being like a building biologist, just figuring out my spaces where the problem spots are, and then figure out how to mitigate those problem spots.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think that is the key takeaway, that every household is different because of structure, the way it's set up, and the supply that's coming in from wherever you live in the world and your supply grid. So for example, I even know where, when I was in South Africa, when the country was going through massive blackouts in 2008, because the grid wasn't being managed properly. And so you'd have the grid just turn off, and a suburb would just go black, and then it would be surged back on again. And it was terrible. And transformers were popping, you know, it was a bit causing big issues. But yeah, so I think maybe if people don't realize, when you've got electricity coming into your house, it's not clean. It's not perfect all the time. It's not uniform. There'll be little surges or ups and downs, or for whatever reason. So
yeah, actually, let me talk about that a little bit more. So there are certain bands of frequencies that are known to be more problematic. There are things like a microsurge meter you can plug into the walls to look for the dirty electricity. And really, the dirty electricity is the set of frequencies that are not expected, like that's coming through your space, through the walls. It could even be coming through from your neighbors, believe it or not. Some of the dirty electricities are the flow of the energy coming through your neighborhood. You might just, even the location of your home could be more problematic compared to if the home was moved, like, you know, 30 feet, you know, a different direction. So it's really interesting. Like, I kind of like visualize it a little bit more like water, like the flow of water, because that's what, like, the electric circuit, that's what electric component's doing, is it's like kind of like giving the pressure of the water, where the magnetic field is like when you turn the faucet on, then it allows it to come out. So kind of, I think of it in those terms a little bit more. It's a little easier to visualize for people that like you have this electric field, this magnetic field, they're both in tandem working. They're moving at the speed of light. You have to realize as well, that's how you're, you know, how all the information is delivered to you, whether it's a radio itself and you have a transmitter, or if it's Wi-Fi or your cell phone, you're getting this information, which is your voice. You know, it's being demodulated and interpreted from the wavelength, and getting these electrons as information to make your transmissions. A lot of people don't. It's funny. I tell a lot of people I know that know nothing about this. I'm like, you're using a cell phone. Do you know how it works? You know, they're like, I guess it's like magic. Well, science is known, right? Like, and then once you know the science, you then become a little more cautionary, you know, like, okay, I'm going to like, be very cautious with this technology, how it's being used, the intensity, like you're saying, the intensity of how intense this radio frequency is or this magnetic field makes a difference, as well as how much you're exposing yourself to it, the behaviors you have with it. Mm-hmm. Even at the behaviors at the time of day, like I don't use hardly any tech past dusk. When I think about melatonin and I think about these other systems and I think about the intersection of the technology with them, then I try to minimize my exposure to them, especially at nighttime, for preserving my regeneration.
I know we sort of mix all in the same fields, and it's like the glasses that I'm wearing at the moment have a tint in them because I'm looking at a computer screen. So
I've got the same ones here.
Yeah.
Like I'm almost at, like, you know, 10 o'clock in the morning, and I have a lot of nice light coming in. So I usually do wear them like in the afternoon and on.
Yeah. So it, for me, I'm now coming up to 6 p.m. So yeah. I'm starting to go down. And there's so many reasons as to, not just EMFs, but on your melatonin, but your retinal health, the cells, like the damage that occurs from that stuff. So, and I guess that's maybe where we should start looking now. Hopefully everyone kind of understands that with EMFs, but I guess just before we get onto the hygiene points, I mean, this has only just come out. What was it? I think you shared it in the Facebook group. Was it 1 or 2 days ago with the Italian court that just ruled for the first time ever in the world that a person developed a tumor, benign tumor, I believe in this case, but they lost their hearing because they had to have it removed and they lost their auditory nerve. But actually, so this is the first time any court in the world has actually ruled that using a cell phone or a mobile phone actually caused a health problem.
Yeah.
And we're only in the beginning, it's going to be interesting where that particular situation goes to. So.
Yeah. Like other places around the world, like more outside of the United States and Australia where, it's like, oh, use your technology. The messaging is in the narrative is like, use your technology. It's really, we know that it could be harmful, but it could be all these other things too. And like, really it's like omitting the biology, the biophysics that we already know. That's the whole point of the EMF Warriors Library is mm-hmm. to have a resource where people can then go up there and, if you want to have a belief system that this stuff doesn't hurt you, then go ahead and read everything up there. And if after you've read it and you still think none of this hurts you, or you don't want to take any action to maybe mitigate, that's your own choice. But mm-hmm. If you look at other countries around the world, like Cyprus, I believe, just said no Wi-Fi in schools. Like they actually came out saying we're not going to put Wi-Fi in schools, and they're a big movement there. And of course, there's pockets around the United States, like at Berkeley and at different places over in it's on the East Coast somewhere. I think it's either North Carolina, or one of the states out to the east. There's different pockets and movements of groups happening right now where they're wanting to make this really aware to the parents, especially for their kids, because really the kids, right, they don't have the myelin, like I said before. They don't have the cranial density, so the magnetic fields and just the radio frequencies can get in there easier. Like you can see lots of studies up at EMF Warriors, like where you can see the penetration of the radio frequencies through the brain of a child versus through the brain of an adult, and it just gets almost all the way through the kid's brain versus the adult's brain. So it's just those simple things. It's like we want to protect our kids, but most people have to get over that belief system of that, well, these things have no influence on us. They don't hurt us. But I think a lot of that has to do with the invisibility nature of EMFs, because it's invisible to our naked eye, not to our meters, right? The moment you own a meter and the whole world opens up to you and you understand what's going on around you in your environment. So,
yeah, I remember that a couple of years ago, there was an artist who did, I don't know how he did it, but he did photography of wavelengths, and you could actually just see it around a phone and, coming off Wi-Fi routers and he wanted to just map visually map wavelengths that we live in our world now as an artistic point of view. But you look at that and that was a way to visualize, wow, okay, yeah, actually that room is full of the stuff versus that place over there in the park or whatever it happens to be. And it helps make the invisible visible to help, I think, make an informed decision as to, are you happy with that? And I do believe, like what you say also with, especially with children, because I just look at it that, again, we're in a completely experimental world right now. And when I look at young kids who get given phones to play with, to entertain them, or iPads or tablet PCs, again, not only from the blue light emission, because their retinas are being exposed straight away and they don't have any protective mechanism because they haven't yellowed their lenses with age. But then just touching something that's giving off stuff all the time. And we just have no idea right now. And is it, I personally, I'm in the field and where I kind of think I can see some benefits, but I still would like to mitigate that. And I think with the hygiene tips that you're going to go through, the idea is that, yes, we can still use tech, both as adults, and there's probably safer ways that even children could use tech.
Yeah.
And hopefully, if maybe you could get into some of those tips for us. Sure. That I think that would be very useful for people.
Sure. I could start with, like, you mentioned tablets. Like, you know, this is becoming, you know, all the pads that they're putting in schools. Like, it's almost a standard now here. I don't know how it is there, but it's very hard to find a school these days that do not use technology and have kids with, you know, a tablet they're holding in their hands, and they're using, you know, what, an hour or more a day. And a lot of times it's even a lot more than that. But like, for instance, here's a really simple way something like this can be mitigated. So if you have a tablet, like if you're a school admin person and you've got all these tablets in your school, don't have that Wi-Fi on in the tablet. Like, download all of your content first onto the tablet for the students, and then turn off the Wi-Fi, turn off the cloud network or whatever is like trying to sync to it, because that's really the problem. Is the radio frequency often pings, like, you know, once every, I don't know, like somewhere between 5 to 20 seconds, it will ping back and forth and back and forth. And it just continuously brings in radio frequency right into the space. And then if you have, you know, 30 kids in one classroom and 30 tablets all pulsing at the same time, you're just increasing that density. That's outside of the lights, which are usually fluorescent lights that are also giving off problems, especially really high peaks in the blue light, and it's not actually balanced. It's not a balanced light source. So they're getting destruction from the light, destruction from the radio frequency. They might have the window, like the windows block UVA, so there's a lot of beneficial light that could come in that could help mitigate some of this. But if the windows are shut off or closed, it also like doesn't give any beneficial EMFs coming into the situation with all the artificial. And then of course you have, like, you know, routers, you have even the teacher's cell phone or mobile phone that's in the room with them that's bringing in stuff. And who knows what else is going on just outside of their local environment. Like, let's say just a half a mile away, there's a cell phone tower. You know, there could be, who knows, there could be a weather radar system nearby. There could be all kinds of, you know, the entire gambit of radio frequency is getting so large, and it's being so used up by human influences that really, like there's very few environments in really population dense areas right now that it's hard to escape getting some exposure from somewhere. It's really problematic, because the radio frequency is like more behaves like light. It does have a square root fall off from the source. Like I was saying earlier about the magnetic field and the fan, like once you're like 5 feet away from the fan, you might be completely out of the field. But with a radio frequency, it does have kind of a square root fall off, but because it behaves more like light, it can actually reflect and absorb and continue going around in your environment. So depending on what materials are around you, you could actually make your situation a lot better or a lot worse. So for instance, if you put a Wi-Fi router inside of a Faraday cage, which blocks out radio frequency, if the Wi-Fi router is inside of it and you're in with it, that radio frequency cannot escape. So it's just bouncing off the inside walls of the Faraday cage and will just find places to absorb. And that is you and me that's inside of it. So that's kind of the problem I'm seeing, is it's almost hard these days to use like a Faraday cage to get out of the radio frequencies. I kind of went on a tangent there about it, but I thought it was important. We can get back more to mitigation here about how to mitigate places. So I've got an 8-year-old. Well, you want to go ahead?
Because as you said, you know, really the reality in the world now for people who live, say, in Western countries like Europe or North America and Canada, Australia, that you've got millions and millions of people who live in cities, and the reality is, that's where they live, and they can't change certain things. But it would be nice, I think. So as one tip, if school admins, because everything's going digital. I joked the other day with a kid about, oh, what did the teacher write on the blackboard? Because, no, we don't get blackboards anymore. So I thought, okay, yeah, so it's not blackboards. It's, you know, it's like whiteboards where you write. And it's like, no, we've moved to digital boards now. Oh, right, okay. So it's a digital board that the teacher writes on, plus you get given your tablets, you know, to converse with the board, or I don't know how they do it. So, but yeah, so I guess in that case, it would be better, I guess, if schools could say, right, we want for whatever reason, for data to give the kids this, but download it onto the tablets. So is it just, that's already got me just thinking, particularly with as a mitigation. So is it better to use Wi-Fi versus for data versus connecting to the cellular network?
No, like I view like a, it's funny you mentioned this. Like I went up to a person's home recently to look at her situation, and she was living within 500 feet of two cell phone towers. And the cell phone towers happened to be giving off average densities of around like 2 to 4 milliwatts per square meter in density. And she, her main problem though, wasn't those towers. Her house was an adobe house with, had like an aluminum mesh in the walls. So when she was in the home, I was registering like way, way safe, like pretty safe levels of radio frequency from the cell phone towers inside her home. But I asked her to turn on her Wi-Fi router she was using all the time. It just peaked up to like 10 milliwatts per square meter, like in her space, like right where she was sitting. And really it was her Wi-Fi router that was more of her problem than the cell phone towers, just because she was almost like in a Faraday cage being in her house. She didn't realize it from those cell phone towers. Now, most houses don't have like that aluminum mesh that can help back block the radio frequency. Concrete does a really good job actually as well of mitigating the radio frequency through the walls. So yeah, concrete's a good one. But I guess to the point of like mitigating, like your question of like, you know, what is better or worse, the cell phone versus the Wi-Fi, you also have to, like, some of this is unknown, right? Like the frequency used. So like a lot of the frequencies, for instance, that are in a lot of devices now are like 2.4 gigahertz. And now they're wanting to like push the 5G up into these bands where you get like, you know, maybe like 10 to 30 gigahertz, like, because these are bands that have been reserved for other reasons in the past, and now they're wanting to use them because they're running out of space for all their cellular stuff. So like the frequency that is, like, as you go up the chain and you make the frequency is just a, like, if you think of the frequency as the, you know, the oscillation, the larger the frequency, like the taller it is, the longer the wavelength of that frequency is. And when you get to a longer frequency, you actually reduce its intense, like its intensity on things. So like radio, just straight radio, has a really long wavelength. Like it's like, you know, like, I don't know, like 30, like the measurement is usually like 30 to like, you know, a football field's length long for a radio wave. But if you look at something like blue light, right, it's like 400 nanometers. It's really tiny, but it packs more of a punch because it's tinier. So what's happening is a lot of these frequencies that have been used, like Wi-Fi and cell networks and all these stuff, have been in this frequency range that we already know causes different forms of damage. Like if you go up on PubMed or you go into the Newtopia Warriors Library, you can see all these studies and see, like, you know, 875 megahertz will cause this damage in rats, and, you know, like, you know, 1 gigahertz will cause this damage to DNA and it shatters DNA. And like, you'll see all this stuff up there, but now they're actually starting to use these bands that are just more intense, right? That they'll pack more of a punch because the wavelength's getting smaller and smaller and smaller. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does. Yeah, and that's how radio waves and TV signals can be transferred across a country so far, because they're in a different band. And
that's right.
Yeah. Okay, so we right now, I guess, with that, so that with mitigation there, some people might think Wi-Fi is healthier than cell. Maybe, maybe not. It's one of those unknowns, unless like you said, you have a meter and you can test it and you can see in your particular situation.
Yeah. Like I said, I think once you're into these radio frequencies, it's a matter of exposure times and the intensity of them. And once you're exposing yourself, even to the regular Wi-Fi or cell phone, it's kind of almost irrelevant. Like, we already know the damage is happening there, and it's just moving into the future. As we move into the future, it's going to just get worse, because it's not only are you going to have all these frequencies, now we're having all these extra frequencies we're going to have all this exposure to on top of it. Mm-hmm. So I don't see, like, yeah, a person comparing like a Wi-Fi to a cell phone, like, guys, they've both been shown to have potential detrimental effects if you go look at the science. So it's as simple as that.
Okay. Yeah. So just a healthy awareness of your time spent connected through these wireless signals is what people need to be aware of in that situation there. You mentioned dirty electricity. That's, I think if anyone has looked at it before, they may have come across things that they can actually stick in their outlets that's meant to mitigate some of that. Is that useful?
Yeah, like I was saying earlier, there's a microsurge meter that measures the GS units, which are the gram Stetzer units. It's kind of like a formula that lets you know, like, oh, what level am I currently at? Which they want you to be like at a 40 or lower typically if you're not sensitive to EMFs. But if you are sensitive to EMFs, you want to really get that number down in your walls, the energy that's going through your walls and the frequency. It's like the frequencies that are being used to minimize the bad frequencies and have more of a better flow through your walls. For instance, there's also a green wave one that actually.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking of. Yeah.
The green wave one has the audio component to it as well. So you can actually hear the amount of dirty electricity, which is pretty cool. But yeah, like I said, this gets into a complex biological, like building biologist mitigation, because like there are filters that you can buy to help regulate it, but you got to know what you're doing with the filters. You just can't like just start throwing them on walls. You can actually make problems. I had a problem up in my house in Seattle before I moved down here to Bend. And when I had filters in one wall, I was actually causing more dirty electricity generation in another part of my house because I had the filters put into a different part of the wall. So like how the dirty electricity flows through your house matters too, depending on the spaces you want to live in. That's why it gets a little more technical, but at least with that unit to measure it, you might know if, okay, I really don't have much of a dirty electricity problem, or I do actually have a dirty electricity problem. So like, for instance, in the room I'm in here, I actually have three computers, you know, one of the computer I'm talking to you on. And I will actually get a dirty electricity of like 600 to 700 on my GS units, which is really high. It can actually get way higher than that. I've seen 2000 or more. So I actually do have filters in here, and I've pulled everything back down under 50 just with like four or five filters for this room, because this space has a lot of EMF potential with devices in here. So like I won't have my printer plugged in because I know it gives off radio frequency. I have my speakers pushed all the way back with my monitors. They're all pushed back away from the space. So I'm using the square root fall off of getting out of the field to my advantage. All of my mice, I guess my mouse and my keyboards are all wired to the USB ports, right? So I don't have any wireless coming off of here. And then like knowing all this and I have proper grounding on all my stuff, even with all that, I still was getting dirty electricity generated from these devices through this local environment of this office. But if I go to the next room, the dirty electricity immediately goes down to like 100. And if I go another room over, I'm back down to 50 without me doing anything, just because of the generation in here. So that dirty electricity, it's kind of like just electricity they don't know what to do with, really. Like they have big grounds. Like if you see like your main power line systems outside, oftentimes you'll see this long yellow line going into the ground, right? Mm-hmm. All they're doing there is they're just dumping out a lot of the dirty electricity into the ground. So like they're using the earth itself to dissipate it. And they're kind of like not cleaning up the dirty stuff coming through our lines, the frequencies that are coming through our lines.
Okay. So it's interesting. Yeah. Cause, I didn't realize then. So with these green wave units, for example, as one brand name, that it's not just a plug and play where people think, oh, I just buy one, plug it in my unit and I've I protect myself. It's not as simple as that you're saying.
Yeah. You got to know what you got to have experience with it, know what you're doing. You have to test. You have to test with certain breakers on and off even. You have to test with lights on and off. Like I've had, a lot of situations like that's what you do too with when you test with the fields, like if you have a cornet or if you have an acoustimeter or if you have, you know, a tri-field meter, all these things when you're testing the magnetic and electrical fields and radio frequencies, you go on and do the same thing. You want to turn things on and off and test things in both situations, even with certain circuit breakers off. Here's a great example. I'll tell you an amazing example of what I found. In my bathtub, I actually have voltage coming into my bathtub if I'm standing or sitting in it. And the reason why is that there's wires that run kind of underneath the bathtub and go and power another wall back in the bathroom behind the bathtub. And when I turned off my circuit breaker to that wall, all the stray voltage was gone out of the bathtub. But I wouldn't have known that if I would have had like all those meters I just rattled off, including the Green Wave and the Microsurge Stetzer meter. I wouldn't know that I'd have stray voltage coming in my body because I'd need a body voltage meter or a multimeter to be standing in the bathtub and testing it with the electricity on to know that I'm getting this voltage in me. So now I have a practice of, I have the lights turned off in that back room. It takes the voltage from about 4.3 volts down to about like 0.3 volts. It's like takes away like 4 volts out of the bathtub. If somebody comes in and turns on the light switch while I'm taking a bath or shower, suddenly 4 volts could be in my bathtub. See what I'm saying? So it's like how things work in an environment in a house is completely different for every situation.
And that's probably the biggest takeaway someone can have there, is that if you do fall into the electromagnetic sensitivity range, or you believe you are, that actually, as you said, you'll need someone who's got all the fancy equipment and who understands all of these frequencies and the interactions to advise you further if you want to truly mitigate some of that stuff.
Like I said, I think the building biologist, that concept, 10 years from now, the entire population will know what a building biologist is. It's pretty much like it's flooding over. Like this issue is coming into the paleo community. It's coming into everywhere. Like everyone's starting to catch on to what's been happening since really the 1890s, right? Since we first had the power grid come in with the AC circuit and Tesla. DC sources can be a problem to the electrosensitive, but they're not as much in comparison to the AC sources because of that pulsing effect again.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we've talked about going onto airplane mode and downloading instead. Is airplane mode good enough? Is that a good thing that people should practice?
It's better, right? Like you said, you also said like you don't want kids staring into a blue screen, but maybe there will be programs built into these devices in the future where they will just offer amber tinted stuff. So then it's up to the person. It's like, you know, the person that might believe this blue light's not hurting them, they can go ahead and use the blue light. But the person that wants to have like not that those blue light frequencies coming into them, they have the option to put something over it to block it, you know. And so it's, again, not as detrimental person, like you said, to the retina and to like all these other systems over time, depending on how much like light is coming off that and the time of day you use it.
You know, like, and so even there, those films that you can get to put over screens, I know they're not the best because at the end of the day, you need the color spectrum to filter the true amount of blue. But I've kind of felt like the world knows now that, and the science is there, that this blue light wavelength does create retinal problems in the long term, and particularly even the younger children. It's like, you know, instead of people having to buy a film, why don't manufacturers just build it in? And because the cost would be like nothing if they're doing it on mass like that. And people wouldn't even notice a difference.
Right. It's going to be a boon. It's going to actually be a bonus to business, in my opinion. Like once everyone realizes it's a problem and they offer a product that has it built into it, then the public will buy that product over the other people. So of course, like it's actually business needs to look at this as like okay, what do I do to also help mitigate and also be with this issue? Because everyone in business has kids too. They want to help protect their children. You know, like the number one takeaway is, you know, like Steve Jobs, right? Like we have this up at the Newtopia website. Steve Jobs did not let his own kids use tech, the tech that he had. Like it's up there. Like you can read it. So like a lot of these CEOs, a lot of these people that are aware, have maybe been aware of the issue for 10, 20 years. They know what's going on with some of these frequencies, because what I'm talking about is like the science is really coming in super strong, like in the last 5 years, but really like we've known about the biological intersections since like the 1960s, like in strong amounts. And by the late 1970s, like there were like, you know, like Robert O. Becker and Andrew Marino and a lot of the other people back in the day that did a lot of these research on like calcium effluxing into the body. They knew that, they didn't know the exact mechanisms why this was so bad to the mitochondria, but they knew that something bad was happening to the cell and there were detrimental effects happening to it. Mm-hmm. So like from that point on, I think a lot of people that have studied the science and know about this, knew about the biophysics and that are in the tech industry will just know that, okay, well, let's find safe tech, really safe ways to use our tech, because we don't think it's going away. So, you know, in schools, why would you put in Wi-Fi systems? Why would you just not Ethernet Cat7 lines, you know, really good blocking of the EMFs through your classrooms away from the students, and you get faster upload and download speeds, right? You don't have to worry about like all the hitching. Like there's so much advantage to actually hardwiring. It's almost ridiculous that the whole society is going toward wireless anyway, because it's more of like a behavioral addiction thing, right? Because we know the blue light also causes addiction in kids. You know, a lot of kids have a problem just like not playing their games, or, you know, just not watching videos. And it's like people are just, you know, stuck, glued to, like we know, either to the TV or to the computer now. And this blue light is helping feed that addiction pattern. And then, like, for us that have already mitigated, we don't fall into that trap of addiction. We can actually establish behaviors where we have these windows of time where we do all of our work, get everything done, and then have our other rest time, our period where we're regenerating as it should be. I mean, that's what, you know, if we're out in nature, that's what the human body's expecting, right?
Yeah. Well, that's time efficiency, you know, saying, right, you know, I'm using a tech device to perform a function, work-related or social, but I don't want to be on it all day. I actually want to go out and interact with nature or other human beings, because that's what life's about.
That's so, right. Yeah.
Okay, so you mentioned grounding earlier. That's another way that people could mitigate things. I'm just looking at my workstation here, and I've got one of those electrical grounding mats that cell phone guys normally use so that they drop charge and don't blow the motherboard and all of that stuff. But so I purposely put my laptop also on one of these mats to make sure that I can ground the laptop in this case here. That's something else you think people should maybe consider using?
Yeah, I would also, I'd be careful with the mat. Like depending on where it's plugged in and where you're living, for instance, here's a great example. Let's say you have a person next door that has solar panels, and they have an inverter for their solar panels to convert their DC energy into AC. Then they create a lot of dirty electricity that flows down into your house, and now you're grounding in your house.
Okay.
Now, so, what's happening? You're getting a lot of voltage into your body from dirty electricity.
So the grounding mat's not getting rid of that situation?
No, like it depends on the flood of energy in your, like around your house. Like
in the soil, in the ground itself.
Yeah. Like in certain, like I will not, like when I'm in a city, I will not go take off my shoes and go ground. I will not do that because of the wiring and stuff I know that's going on in cities and the density in certain cities. There are like most of the places in a city are not going to have the wires right there, but the dirty electricity flow from the power grid makes it that, like, it's almost like a balancing act. It's like, am I being grounded in a place with dirty electricity? Am I actually doing more damage in my body than if I would have just like insulated myself and put on my rubber shoes?
Mm-hmm.
So that's why when I ground, I go out in nature And I know that there's nothing, the power grid's not around. So I know that that grounding potential will not have the dirty electricity flow through it. And that's what I'm worried about is like, it's probably like in certain houses and situations, you might just be lucky and it's like a kind of like a Russian roulette. Like you can plug it in, you're grounded and everything's good. And you see, like if you can measure it and then you also measure the dirty electricity and you kind of know your situation, then I would feel more comfortable in knowing that it's okay to plug into an outlet. But that outlet feeds like all the electricity in the home, remember, and those circuit breakers aren't turned off. So there is going to be some energy flow potentially coming through. And that's what I'm more concerned about is like, I'm taking it to the extreme. I'm going to ground in nature to make sure I'm safe versus taking a little bit of a risk. A good way to know, like, if maybe there's stray voltage coming into your grounding stuff is if you get any heart arrhythmia over time, like, let's say you do this for, like, 2 or 3 months, and you start feeling like something's not off, something's not right, and you feel like you might get, like, some heart skipping and heart things. Like, I've heard people reporting that in, like, city centers where they're using grounding stuff, and they're trying to ground in a city, and it's kind of not their fault. They want to do the right thing. They want to try to stay grounded. But it's just the other dirty electricity that's around you that could bring in more stray voltage. And like I said, the home environment's different. Like you might turn on a light switch and now it's suddenly your grounding mat might be compromised a little bit. Maybe your house isn't grounded well at all, like outside where it's being grounded. So
yeah, the actual electrical system itself.
Electrical system itself. So it's something you don't want to like, just like, I don't know. I have just a precaution there. Just like be cautious about it. Know what you're doing. If you're smart about it, you probably can get away with it if you know your situation fully.
And that's why it's called EMF awareness.
Yeah. Otherwise, go out to nature. Go into the sun. Go out to like a park or something. Right.
Yeah. Well, that's always the thing. I guess we're living in this modern world. We try create devices and things to help recreate the natural, but in this situation, what natural grounding is actually going outside to ground, taking off your shoes and socks and actually letting your skin touch the ground. And that's where the electrical discharge is happening and you're soaking up all the negative ions. And
that's right.
So it's like most things in life, natural is the best thing in this situation. I guess we're just trying to figure out through mitigation, if I live somewhere and how do I still do things?
It's hard to find a shortcut to nature, right?
Mm-hmm.
We want to like be connected. Like we have this mentality, like let's stay connected. Right. But no, you also have to think about, this is the time I want to disconnect and I want to go out into nature. Like there has to be both on a daily basis in your life to make it work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, we're coming up on time here. Would you say there's any other big point for mitigation that you'd maybe like to just get across before?
Yeah, I do. So in my EMF, when I think about EMF hygiene, right, I think about the highest use things I'm using in my life and in my world. And the highest use thing, believe it or not, is sleeping in a bed, because you spend 8 hours or more of your life there every day. And you want your bed space specifically to be as free of EMF, of the artificial EMFs as possible, right? So to do that, there's some really quick tips I could say. So don't have anything plugged in, especially if it's a two-pronged ungrounded plug-in. Don't have any of that plugged in near your sleeping space. Don't have your cell phone or your mobile phone plugged in and use it as your alarm clock. Do not do that, because as you're charging it, if you charge it by your bed, you know, not only are you potentially putting yourself in a magnetic or electrical field, you also have, if you don't have it on airplane mode, you're bringing in radio frequency. Alarm clocks that are plugged in are usually very problematic. The LEDs on them usually have like a 3 to 5 foot radius, you know, magnetic field. So I've seen a lot of situations where they just have an alarm clock there and it's plugged in, and like the entire head space and part of the abdomen is just filled with a magnetic field because of that alarm clock. In addition to that, you don't want an alarm clock anyway with an LED, because you want to sleep in darkness. Because if you sleep in darkness, you're getting more regenerative ability, right? You'll get into a deeper sleep that way. So try to black out your room as good as you can for, again, that regeneration. Then what I tell people is if they have the, like, depending on if they live in an apartment or a house complex or whatever, if they have the ability to shut off at least that wall circuit breaker where they're sleeping, again, it shuts off what's in the wall and the flow of energy through the wall. So you're in a better, just overall quantum better situation for your health in the long term. Yeah, like I've told people, like, well, I, you know, people have told me, I have this cell phone and I use it for my alarm clock and I want to wake up and I still need it on. So I say, well, then put up your ringer really high and go put it in your bathroom, you know, like 10 feet away. So it will still wake you up and it forces you out of bed, but now that thing is out of your space completely. Mm-hmm. So yeah, those like the sleeping space is number one. And then, like, again, the EMF hygiene for the evening, as evening approaches and the sun sets, try to like minimize your blue light exposure. Start minimizing your, you know, the electronics you're using if you can. Like, I start just turning off lights kind of one by one through the house. So it kind of like brings on, well, if I have lights on, I start turning them off as well. Like if somebody else is turning them on, I actually don't turn them on usually, but I'll start turning them off one by one. I put in incandescent lights in the house as well because of the color spectrum on that, like very little blue and a lot more red and IR. Of course, IR is the heat that gives it off, and everybody says energy inefficient, but guess what? It provides heat. So living in a cold environment like I do, I love the incandescents because it gives me extra heat if I need to have them on at least. So yeah, it's really that 400 to 550, which is up through the grid, 400 nanometers to 550 nanometers, is that range of light that is shows to detrimental to, you know, lowering your melatonin levels. If you're just constantly exposing yourself at night as that melatonin is trying to build, you want to keep it, because that melatonin, like your vitamin D, like vitamin D's massively powerful and amazing to your system, right? Like in almost every vitamin D, everyone in the world has vitamin D that's being crashed right now because they're not getting out into the sun, or they're afraid of the sun. They don't get midday sun. Melatonin, on the other hand, is an amazing compound as well. And it works in all of your cells and is just like super regenerative. And if you miss out on the melatonin and if you miss out on the vitamin D habitually, right, as a process, you're just basically ensuring that you're just lowering your overall health. You're lowering your redox potential. You're probably going to be driving up what's your mitochondrial heteroplasmy, and then you will hit certain points at which you'll start expressing certain diseases.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I mean, that's probably the simplest thing where at least people would know. Melatonin is your sleep hormone, and yeah, you want to sleep. Think of jet lag, why people end up taking melatonin supplements. But you use some big words there, and I know it might go over some people's head with the quantum, but there's going to be a lot of people who do follow that kind of understanding. But in this case, I would say, if anyone else is interested and you're listening to this, and we've just touched the surface of what we've gone through today. We could just talk and talk and talk about all the different ways to mitigate, learn things about, yeah, should you ground, shouldn't you ground, just that awareness factor. I've definitely learned a lot myself today. And I just want to let people know that, yep, EMF Warriors. So go to emfwarriors.com. It's the website there. It's a free resource. Sign up. Scott's mentioned you get a library of information. I mean, we're talking a massive library. If you really are interested in the topic, there's videos, there's PDFs, there's research papers, there's just tons. You go in there, find what you want to go for. And not only that, but there's a group of like-minded people who understand the EMF situation. All these type of ranges that Scott was mentioning with the wavelengths, the type of meters, which one to use, which situation, how to test. The Facebook group would be a great place. I've seen some amazing conversations in there about that. So you could go in there and ask questions. People will guide you as you're learning, because that's really the key thing. Hopefully that people who are listening to this will get is just, it doesn't matter if you come from not knowing a thing or if you're advanced, as long as people are aware that this is a real sort of health concern that people need to be aware of, I believe. And it just depends how you want to mitigate it and how far you want to go. But I think EMF Warriors is fantastic because you just provide the information and it's up to you. You know, just read it, interact with people. No one's getting stuck up about anything. It's just actually just, yeah, learn, and which is great. You know, that's what it should be at the end of the day. So please, you know, anyone listening, if you're more interested, go to emfwarriors.com and all the links are there. So Scott, I just want to say thanks very much for your time today. Like I said, I've learned so much, and I think everyone listening to this will have definitely learned a lot too.
Yeah, well, we can do it again later. Continue the conversation. Like you said, it's massive. The topics are really broad, and they go into different areas from, you know, like what you're saying, how to mitigate, and all the way into the biophysics. If you're looking to, like, you know, looking for, you know, how do you try to mitigate certain disease expressions too. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think we'll probably end up having some advanced discussions about that too, just to tap onto this. So, thanks very much.
All right. Thanks, Gary.
Okay. Bye. Thank you.